Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 98 of the CUN Site Experience. This episode is brought to you by Trellance. From data to insights, the right way. My name is Randy Smith. I am one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Debbie Painter. Debbie is the president and CEO of the Kentucky Credit Union League and someone that I've met a few times over the years, but this was our first chance to sit down and have a longer conversation. So, as we do here, we decided to record it. Let y'all listen in. This was a ton of fun. We covered a lot in this episode. We talked about leadership and the communication skills it takes to be a good one in this more digital environment that we're all living in. We also talked about growing up in credit unions. Debbie is another of the past guests on this show to start as a teller and work her way all the way up to the CEO office. I thought Debbie had some great career advice throughout. One of them was just looking at each position as part of a longer, bigger career and not just a job. What hacks she also has for the internal candidate for that CEO position. Some really good stuff here. As always, we wrap up the show having a little bit of fun. The rapid fire questions. Debbie's favorite album of all time. What she was like in high school. Was there any memorable trouble in her past? You'll have to listen all the way through to find out. So, without further ado, I give you my conversation with Debbie Painter. Enjoy. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Randy. It's good to be here.
I've been excited for this conversation. It's been too long since we've all seen each other in person, it seems like. You know, in doing some homework, there is so much to talk about. You know, I'd like to start with a question about staying connected. It had been a while since I had a league president on the show, and I started to think about it, and I'm like, you have your team just like the rest of us do. You also have your board. My guess is there's probably a foundation and service corp board too. I remember from Jill being an LP, you know, you have your credit unions, you have the legislators, the other associations. Any hacks staying connected to so many folks out there?
Yeah, you know, I think when this whole thing started, we were all like, what do we do? How do we communicate? Who do we communicate with? And who's first? Right. So what we did is we focused on our credit unions and we focused on getting them engaged and connected, not only with us, but with each other.
Yeah.
And so we started, just like I'm pretty sure everyone else, we started with the weekly CEO calls. And for us, that really helped our folks. You know, they're used to connecting with people outside of the state. Well, you know, they travel outside of the state, but and kind of take for granted their peers that are, you know, a mile down the road or whatever. So it's been really good to see our folks start to engage with each other. And that's what Zoom has allowed us to do.
Absolutely. But you just made such an interesting point that I hadn't thought about through this entire pandemic we've all shared. But one of the things that I noticed just from traveling around the country is that like credit unions, and I'm going to make a generalization here, but like the CEO of a credit union is so much, it seemed to me, more likely to share ideas and connect like at that national conference where it's somebody from across the country than they were from the credit union that was right down the street in the same market, where there was almost that view of being competitors in that sense, right? Where if you're in Kentucky, the credit union in California, probably not a competitor, right? So that's interesting to hear that it's kind of brought people together, because that's always been one of those head scratchers for me. In my mind, I've always thought the banks have 90% of the market. We don't have to compete with each other, right? Like, so it's like that. So we can all be friends. That's awesome. I love hearing that. When you look back on the past year, have you seen yourself, I guess, or what would you say is the biggest area that you've grown as a leader?
I think for me, and of course, you know, I've only been in the job less than 2 years, even though I've been around for 1,000. I've only been in this role for less than 2 years. But I think what it's done for me is it's made me be more intentional with not only with myself, but with our staff and our team, and staying positive and staying calm, I think, you know, has been good for us. Because, you know, we're small. And when you have a staff of, right now, there's six of us because we're too short. We have to love each other, you know, just
other,
like family. And so I think being intentional and being present has been big the last 2 years.
It's interesting you say that. A couple of different things there. The first is I didn't realize when we first met, like in Minnesota on the LP retreat, that you were just fresh on the job at that point, right? So, I mean, as the CEO. But it's interesting what you say about the, like, staying intentional with the teams, because everybody has so much going on, like, emotionally. You know, we're all dealing with something. We're all dealing with things outside of work as well, right? So it's that's a great bit of advice. Is there a concern that you have for credit unions? We've kind of all seen the numbers coming out of economists, right? Pretty tough for any ROI probably for the foreseeable future. So what's the biggest concern, I guess, you have over the next couple of years for credit unions in this kind of tough financial environment?
Well, you know, it's the same concern we have every day. Whether there's COVID, pandemic, financial crisis, whatever it is. And it's the survivability of our credit unions, especially, you know, our small ones. Here in Kentucky, 80% of our credit unions are under $30 million in assets. You know, and it doesn't mean because you're small, you can't survive. It just means that those are the ones that you really worry about because of staffing issues. The manager retires, the board gets tired, you know. So mergers are always on our mind.
Yeah.
And for instance, in Kentucky, we have four mergers that we know is going to happen this year. And those were discussions that started pre-merger. Pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So this has nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah.
So a lot of four that has nothing to do with COVID, what does 22 look like?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That I just think that, you know, we're almost 12 years into CU Insight. And I know when we started, there were double the credit unions there are today. So, you know, I mean, it's a scary thing to think about because we need our credit unions. So, but, you know,
our counterparts are having to deal with the same thing, which I found interesting is the number of banks in Kentucky, how they have declined.
Absolutely.
Over just the last 5 years. So it's an industry-wide issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Kind of just to kind of stay on this path, before all this happened, even, and it's continuing now, there was so much disruption, I would say, in financial services overall. I've had to throw this out there. I have been so impressed with how quickly credit unions have adapted over the past few months. That kind of goes against our nature in general, but it's been amazing to watch, right? And I think it's been I think to a lot of folks that I've talked to, that idea is like, oh, we can do this. Like, we can do this quick, right? But, you know, kind of looking out there, looking forward, also just thinking back, no global pandemic, you know, type of a thing. Is there anything that you think credit unions have to just kind of fundamentally do different to stay relevant going forward?
I think, number one, we have definitely experienced the fact that you can never say never, and you can't say no just for the sake of saying no. We've never done it. Why do we need to do it? But to get past those cliches, they're going to have to truly invest in rep membership, invest in that community, and invest in their employees.
Yeah.
You are only as good as your weakest employee. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't want any weak employees.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And so I want us all to be strong. So they have to really focus on, I think, those three areas.
So that's a question that I didn't send you, I guess, but it just has me kind of going down a rabbit hole. And maybe this is just scratching my own itch in a sense. But with this, like, where we've kind of all were forced to move to digital maybe faster than we would have if we were just left to our own accords. Do you see that as a benefit almost when you talk about, you know, developing employees and training? I'm sure there's plenty of opportunities through the league, through CUNA, through all kinds of organizations from training. Are you seeing in the credit unions in Kentucky where people are starting to take advantage of that? You know, one of the things that I often said with CU Insight was, like we get to see all the CEOs at conferences, and maybe other people get to come to maybe a league event once a year or something like that. But how deep in the credit union does that education actually, and you know, kind of get back to the smaller credit unions, how does that take place? Have you seen more of an adoption where you're seeing more people engaged in the maybe the education side of things?
We have, but I'll be honest, hopefully this doesn't hurt me. I don't think as much as I think it should.
Okay. Yeah.
Plus, you know, and I know that you can turn that video off on that Zoom call and you might have 20 people sitting in the room with you. You may have only registered one, but you might have 20. Yeah. Listening. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, while I say I wish there was more engagement, there may be.
We don't see who it is, right? Yep. That's actually true. I've always wondered how Netflix actually knows how many people are watching since people share their logins, right? The last question of this section, if we were to sit down a year from now, what are you most proud of that you and your team have accomplished? If you had to break out that foggy crystal ball for me.
I think, again, because we're so small, I am so proud of the way our folks, this staff has stepped up. They have given 180% to everything that we have done the last 6 months, whether it's a Zoom call or setting up a PPE store for our credit unions so that they don't have to do the research. All they've got to do is go on our website and hit click and get a box of masks, whether it was a virtual expo that they just came up with and said, let's do it. And I said, okay, sure. You know, they have just shown no fear in serving their credit unions. Their dedication, their servitude is, I am just so proud of them. And I think for a staff of six, we've accomplished quite a bit.
Oh, that is beautiful. Shout out to the team. That's fantastic. On to the second part of the show, the leadership and life hacks. This is always my favorite part of the show, but I was excited to talk to you about this just from doing a little of that background homework. It seems like you've kind of grown up in credit unions. You know, first in a credit union and then with the league. And now, you know, as you said, 2 years ago, you took the gig as the president and CEO of the league. To just take that step back to 2 years ago, what inspired you to take that job as president and CEO?
You know, it is funny. When I got involved, when I was at the credit union and I got involved at the chapter level, that's when I became aware of what the league was and what the league was all about. And I knew from that point, that's where I want to be. I want to be the league. I want to serve all of our credit unions, not just one. And so when I got to the league, I just knew this was my home. This was my forever home. And I love to manage. I love to manage people. I love to manage. I love to fix things. So I'm kind of a fixer. So the league president's position was just kind of what Jill said. It's a dream job.
Yeah.
And I now am living my dream.
Oh, that's fantastic. You saw a look on my face. The idea that you love to manage, that is not my jam. And that's why we have a CEO now. So I'm always like, it's such a hard thing to do. I don't get it. But that's fantastic. Then let me ask you, from growing up through the system and you know, you get to the league, you realize you found your forever home, you become CEO. Has the inspiration changed at all in those 2 years?
Just grown. I love my job and I want that for everyone. I want everyone to love their job. I want everyone here to love their job, but the inspiration is just grown. I just, again, I can't say enough about wanting to be here, loving being here and loving what we do as an organization. So
your answer, or I've already kind of repeated it back, the forever home makes this next question a little more interesting even, right? And I found it interesting on the podcast talking to people that have made it to be the CEO. Some are like internal candidates, right? Like having, like coming up through the organization. I've talked to others who, you know, whether it was, you know, they felt they had to leave to get to the CEO chair. I think about Tom Kane talking about when he was on the podcast being passed over for it. That candidate didn't work so well. And then he got the job the second time. You know, do you have any advice for somebody who's at their, like, whether it's at their credit union, their league, any organization really, where they're like, this is my forever home, but maybe they're at that C-suite level and have career, you know, there's kind of, I want to stay here, but I also want to be the CEO. Do you have any advice to become the CEO, I guess, and any hacks along the way for you that kind of, I guess, you realized?
Show them you're the person for the job. Show them through your attitude, through your job performance, your ethics, your loyalty. Show them you're the one for the job, and they would be silly to go anywhere else.
To go any other direction. So if you don't mind me asking, did you make it known that you wanted that position coming up, or?
I mean, did I sit around and tell the board, hey, when Wendell leaves, I want this job?
I want to be next. Yeah.
No. Okay. No, I think because I was fortunate enough to have someone that helped me, and he made sure that what he knew, I knew, that whatever was going on, I was a part of it. And so it just kind of, it was like this natural thing that kind of grew, that I think everyone just assumed I wanted this job.
Right.
You know, because, and it got to where, you know, it was just, well, what does Wendell and Debbie think about such and such or whatever? So, and again, I think that's all a part of showing them that you're that person. You are the person who should take this job next.
If you don't mind me asking again, is that something from like a perspective of like, was Wendell being intentional, making sure to put you out there like that too? Was it something that the two of you talked about at all, or just?
I think it was unintentionally intentional.
Okay.
Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think because he realized up front that I could be trusted, I could be depended on, and that I was eager to learn. I wanted to learn it all. I wanted to know the next step, to know the next thing. So I think it just worked well. I think we made a good team.
That's fantastic.
Trust me, he was the president,
yep.
But I think we made a good team.
That's good stuff. Thanks, sir. Digging into that. I think people are going to learn from that. As a leader, you've mentioned your team multiple times and how well they've done through all of this. Is there something they've heard you say so many times? They're like, Debbie, we know they can finish your sentence.
You know, I was named league president in March of 18. In May, we sold our building that we had been in since 1970. And we were given about a 30-day notice we had to get out. And so we had to find a place, get moved. So a lot of things were happening from March that year. We had some key unexpected retirements besides the league president. We just had some, and I just kept saying, come on, let's just get through this. Let's just get through this year. And so, and then 2019 hits. And we are faced with what we think is going to be a huge tax battle in Frankfurt, that we've got fill the membership issues with our DFI. We've got, and then I had to hire a new governmental affairs person who came on right at that time. And I'm like, come on, folks, let's just get through this. So anytime you hear me say, let's just get through this, that's Debbie speak. So you're going to be okay. You've got to trust me.
In 2020, we'll just write this
in year, 2020. Right? So,
we're just ready for 2021. You know, sometimes as a leader, you have to make those difficult decisions. You mentioned earlier about liking to manage people. Sometimes short-term, the decisions might not be popular. Is that something that you've always had the ability to do? Or was that something that I guess you kind of had to grow into coming up through your career?
I think for me, my faith has a lot to do with decision-making, because I'm a prayerful person and I pray about it. And once I truly believe that it's the right decision, then that's the decision I go with. And I have to trust that what I believe to be true or what I believe to be right is right. and then stick to that. My faith plays a big role.
That's very cool. Is there a common myth about leadership that you were, if you just hear it, you're like, I want to, no, I want to debunk that.
I think when it comes to league and association work, I think the myth that you're small, so that must be much easier. You're a smaller league, so things cannot be that hard. I will beg to differ with you.
Absolutely.
So you can't take those things for granted.
Jill had a similar size staff in Connecticut, and I watched her work. I was always like, that's a job I'd never want. No, thank you. So you guys work so hard. So you're everywhere. When you think back to earlier in your career, was there a mistake that either you made or one that you see young leaders make often?
I think the mistake at the time, and probably what I see today, is people not seeing their jobs as careers, meaning maybe you don't want to spend 30 years as a teller, but what can you do as a teller that's going to make you grow into that career? Because if I had not been that teller or that loan officer, or I would not be where I'm at today. I would not have been chosen off the street to work at the league. Of where I started. So I think folks have to see long term, see the long game, not the short game.
I think that is fantastic advice, right? Not looking at the job, but your career overall. That's awesome. Okay, so wait, you're another one who started as a teller and is now a CEO of an organization. I absolutely love that. I should go back through all the guests because there have been quite a few, right? We all say that about credit unions where it's the person who's went from, you know, starting as a teller or a temp. And, you know, even I was thinking about it recently because I saw something on Facebook, but John Pembroke, the CEO of Q's, was like a summer intern at a credit union, you know, to think that many years later. So that's good stuff. Has there been a piece of advice or a life lesson that you've kind of carried with you throughout your career?
I don't know if you call it a life lesson, but I watched my mom and her work ethic, her dedication, and her integrity. And it's like, that's the employee I want to be. I want to be my mom's daughter.
Ah, get a good role model, eh? What did your mom do?
She was civil service.
Okay.
37 years.
Well, shout out to mom. You know, one of the things that I noticed in the first season of the podcast was how important mentors were in people's lives. And I've kind of expanded that to that network also. Like we have such great networks in credit unions. You know, you mentioned very early on about people being willing to share more locally now, but we've always had that. It sounds like the relationship you had with your former boss, I guess, you know, the big broad swipe at the question, but like, how have mentors been important to you, or how has that network been important to you in your career?
Very important. I wouldn't be sitting here, you know, if it weren't for the fact that, you know, Wendell took a chance on someone who had absolutely no governmental affairs experience and asked me to be the governmental affairs person, you know, and I said to him, I have no governmental affairs experience. He said, you have 20 years of credit union experience, and being a lobbyist or lobbying for credit unions is nothing more than telling your story. And who can tell the story more than somebody that has 20 years credit union experience? So he took a chance on me. And when I was at the credit union, there was a manager at the time who did the same, who took a chance on me and said, when that next branch manager job comes open, it's yours. And I'm like, okay, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but okay. So she took a chance on me and then he took a chance.
Oh, another scratch my own itch question, but I think people might enjoy this. So you didn't have the government, like the, so let's call it the traditional governmental affairs, you know, pedigree, let's just say, but you know, he saw all the experience you had in the credit union to be able to tell the credit union story. Was there something you did? You take that position to, I guess, I'm not sure if it's bring yourself up to speed, you know, like were there things that you did that if somebody else maybe gets that opportunity to go to a position that maybe they feel they're unqualified for, but somebody else sees something in them, any ideas, maybe that first 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and you know, what you maybe did?
I think being yourself, because somebody saw that, so it's there, but be yourself, but be a sponge. just watch and learn. You know, I did a lot of just watching how Wendell interacted with the legislatures or the legislators, you know, just watching and then reading. And then again, I love to talk about credit unions. So that wasn't hard for me. And once I realized I didn't have to be trained as a lobbyist, that all I had to do was talk about credit unions, it's like, okay,
I can do this.
In on that.
That's what I love that. You know, before we move on to the last part of the show, if you have a free day, there's nothing on the calendar. What passions do you have outside of credit unions? What does Debbie do to recharge?
I run.
You run. Another runner.
Yeah, I'm a runner.
That's good. Do you run races and marathons or half?
I have ran marathons.
Oh, boy. Wow.
I've done 7.
Oh, wow.
I'm getting old, and that takes a long time to train. And if you haven't noticed, we're a little busy.
Yes, now. I don't know where you'd find the time. So
I do love it. You know, I obviously don't have small kids at home and don't have some of those responsibilities. So it's easy for me on the weekends to just get out and run.
I wish I could say I shared that with you, but I don't. So Jill's the runner in our house. Last part of the show, part 3. It's the rapid fire questions. The questions are rapid, but your answers, they don't have to be. So can have a little fun here. What was Debbie like in high school? And do you remember the first time you got in any memorable trouble?
I was so unmemorable in high school. you know, I was just that middle of the road person. I never got in trouble. My brother got in more trouble than 10 kids.
So. Was that older brother or younger brother?
Older brother.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to live in that shadow, that reputation shadow. Oh, you're red sister. Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. No, you know, I just, high school was high school.
Yeah. You know, we kind of talked about this earlier, but most of us stumbled into a career in credit unions in one way or another. What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were like in high school or younger even?
Oh, I'm going to show my age and how boring I was. You know, when I got out of high school, college wasn't even in my circle of concern at that time. And I just assumed I was going to be a secretary somewhere, and that's what I would do.
Yeah,
I could type and answer the phone. So I think that was okay.
That was what you're going to do. And well, yep. Yeah. You did a little bit more. So
I hope so.
That's awesome. You mentioned running. Do you have any daily routines that if you just don't do, your day feels off?
Again, my faith is where my faith comes in. I do have that time of devotion before my feet hit the floor. Well, I go get coffee. Then
you need the coffee first.
And then I run before I get to work, because if I don't, Debbie's not a great person to be around.
Coffee, faith, and running, and then it's off to the races. The random question: what's the best album of all time? That one you can listen to without skipping a song.
I didn't listen to music a lot, but let me tell you, the Bee Gees could come on, and I was stopped in my tracks. Anywhere would be the Bee Gees. So,
trying to think if that's a first on the podcast here, almost 100 episodes. It might be, but it's yeah. I'm not sure. You know, I'm a reader. Jill and I have stacks of books all over the house that have been recommended to us, and many from people on this show. Do you have a book that either you've gifted others, or that book that you just think everybody should read?
I'm a little leery to say this, but what the heck? I just read Senator Paul, his book on socialism.
Okay. It's
a Case for Socialism. And whether you lean in that direction politically or whether you don't, it is just a good book to learn about that particular stuff. You know, we like to throw that term around a lot these days. Oh, they're just socialists, or oh, they're all for socialism, or that's a good book to just learn what it is, no matter what side of the fence you're on.
There's nothing wrong with that. I haven't even heard of that book. I'm surprised. So that'll be added to the list, obviously. As you've gotten older, what's become more important to you? And has anything become less important?
Faith and family. You just don't take either for granted anymore, you know? Less important? Gosh, I don't know. Life's important. You know, it's just all important, but probably my race to prove myself is not.
It's a beautiful thing when we get to that point or start to. It's one of those that I will say, honestly, you wish we could get that without all the experience, but it tends to be, I think, we got to live this life to get there, right? So there's a question that I didn't send you. When you hear the word success, who is the first person who comes to mind?
Oh, gosh.
I love the question because we all define success differently in different areas. So it's just like, who pops in the mind first?
I try to be humble, you know, but when you said success, I feel like that's me. I am fitting in success.
I love that answer. I absolutely love it. So that is beautiful.
little vanity, I think, but
To me, it's one of my favorite. When Sam Paxton was on the show, I think she was like guest 10. She said that answer too, and then was like, we got to edit that out. I'm like, no, it's my favorite. I love that answer. That's living a successful life when you feel successful, right? So, and we all define it differently. So it's absolutely beautiful. Thank you again, Debbie, for being on the show. My last question that I have for you is, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners or an ask of our listeners?
You know, just again, love what you do. And if you don't love it, find that love. Don't spend 60 years looking for it.
You're right. Yeah, that is true. But I think I already know what the title of this episode is going to be. So we will link to everything that we talked about today in the show notes. If people have more questions, they'd like to reach out to you directly. LinkedIn, the Twitter machine, email. What's your poison, I guess?
Well, I obviously have email. I have LinkedIn. And I'm on that social thing called Facebook.
Well, we will link to your LinkedIn and get your email up there too if people have more questions, which I'm sure they will. They'll want to pick your brain. Thank you again so much, Debbie, for taking the time today. I appreciate you coming on the show. I hope you have an amazing day and, you know, be well and stay healthy, my friend.
Randy, thank you. I appreciate it. And you guys stay well and stay safe.
Before we go, I just have to take a moment to thank all of you for listening. We would not get to have this much fun doing what we do if it wasn't for you. And once again, thank you to Debbie for taking the time out of her busy schedule. Those LPs, they work hard to share her experiences with all of us. And a big thank you to our sponsors, Trellance. Our friends at Trellance have been longtime partners and supporters of ours at CUinsight.com. So please make sure to click on their link in the show notes. Give them some love. See how they are transforming data into actionable insights for credit unions from coast to coast. And don't forget, last thing, the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. Need some stimulation for the old mind? We've got you covered. Get your next book recommendation from the guests on our show. There have been a few good ones here added recently that I will be picking up as well. Thank you all again for listening. Have a great day and stay well, friends.